WKPPPLP, Fargo-Moorhead, 88.1 FM. This is Nemo Cicados, and I hope we're finding you and finding me at KPPPLP Fargo-Moorhead, 88.1 FM, where we are adding local queer color to your airwaves. Tune in to listen at 5 p.m. on the first Wednesday of the month for new content on the radio on 88.1 FM and at our website, at kppfm.com, and click listen live on one of the players on site. Sorry, guys, I've been having low spoons this week. Last program, we talked about pyramids of violence and rape culture, how to recognize when we're working our way towards the top of those pyramids, and how to stop that pattern in its tracks and work towards self-reflection of your actions, peace, and how they shouldn't ever be welcome in our communities, queer or otherwise. You have to confront the problems before they fester and get worse. You can find the program and other archive programs at kppfm.com/finding-me. Today, I'll be getting into the history and use of the word queer. If you want to comment on our show, you can go to 701-566-0917 to leave a message, 3 minutes. And then also, you can contact me over at kppfm.com/finding-me and hit the contact tab. And it will send me an email. Or you can just email me at nemo@kppfm.com or Facebook and Twitter me. Or even Instagram, check out my Instagram at Nemo Potatoes. And then, of course, follow us on Facebook at KPPP Radio, The People's Press Project, and Mexi-Can, or Mexican Online. Let's see. So donations, really need them, helps put queer radio on the airwaves. You can make donations to Fargo-Moorhead's newest low-power commercial-free radio station, and it can be made on our website on kppfm.com/donate. And check out our underwriting opportunities at kppfm.com/underwriting-opportunities on how you can support the first queer radio program in the Red River Valley. So, on Facebook and Twitter, I asked you, what are your thoughts on the word queer? I started out by saying, and I'm summarizing, I use queer to describe myself because it's easier than explaining that I'm transgender male, working against traditional ideas of masculinity through my culture, and being demisexual and identity under the asexual umbrella. So, as the saying goes, I'm here, I'm queer, get used to it. It also allows my identity to change as I grow and evolve through the stages of my life. As I was always questioning when I first start out as cisgender and bisexual, but queer lets me have that flexibility at all times. AKA, I'm not straight, cisgender, or prescribed to that normativity. I also use queer to be inclusive to A spectrum and other identities not otherwise used in the common LGBT acronym and other variations of the acronym that might accidentally forget one or more identities that are valid and are part of our community. But I would never use queer to describe someone who does not use the term for themselves and uses a different term to describe their identity. And I'm willing to abide by those terms to describe folk, whether it's Latinx or another form I'm not otherwise familiar with in my education of identities. I don't police others in what they use to describe themselves and expect the same of others towards what words I use for myself. You do not have to be part of the queer community if you don't want to be. And I don't count kink or pedophilia, trans age, none of that BS. Get the F away from me with that effery. It adds to the toxic myth that my deity is taboo or predatory, and today I'll mention that again. So, to be queer or LGBT, depending on your own identification, is a labor of love, of oneself, and of respecting, loving other consenting adults, and what happens between them is no one's business. So, some of you commented on my post on what you thought, and Paula says here, let's see if I can pull her up, boop. I use queer because I'm pansexual and married, and I don't like use the terms lesbian or gay or homosexual, because sexual organs are fluid too. What is it to be female or male? Why and how do people clock? There are straight people who clock. There are gender normative people who don't look like their sexual markers, right? Why does labeling people matter, right? I go with queer because I'd rather be queer. I would rather be myself than try to pretend to fit some norm that statistically hardly exists, because gender norms only reinforce religiousness and white supremacy, in my opinion. I happen to agree with that, actually, and we're going to get to that soon. Then, over here, we have Jamie Tolbert Franklin. I use queer very much like you do, Nemo. I use it as a collective for my friends and community, and I am cis bisexual woman in a married monogamous relationship. I call myself bisexual. You are valid, girl. Then, let's see, I had some comments on Twitter as well. Luna Diana says, growing up, it mostly meant odd. As someone who never fit in other reasons, I came to self-define as freak, found it liberating. Initial knee-jerk reaction was queer isn't useful word for LGBTQ to coalesce around, then thought about how it disarms haters to claim their word. This is also very true, and I'm about to get into that history because I know you love commenting on our shows with little historical tidbits. So let's see, yes. So thank you everyone for your comments. Please continue commenting on my show. It helps me decide how I want to go in this direction and answer your questions if you have any. I mean, there's going to be some bigoted questions. I'm going to skip over those and I don't care about those. But if you have a genuine question, you know, don't be afraid to ask, even if you think it might be bigoted, because maybe I'll get to it and explain why it's bigoted if you really want to learn. And then I'll give you resources. So, if you didn't see why I post my post on why I use queer, feel free to comment at the link I'll be dropping down below or via the Twitter link. I also expand on what I wrote for it to be better with a history research video that I made today, or not today, but past month or so, where I'll be playing this in a moment, as well as additional thoughts later on I had while writing this program at the end of the video. So, here goes. So some of you have asked me, isn't queer a slur? Is that word being used correctly? Today, I answer that question in this video I crafted, and hopefully it answers your questions. Let's start with the word. Queer. Where did it originate? It's actually disputed where it originated, but both origins mean the same thing. Not straight. I did some looking around for you guys to see what others have found. So Kara wrote an article in 2013 on Autostraddle of what they found. While the origins meant not straight, it was a little while before it was used to describe other people's sexuality and was sometimes used to imply that people were drunk, giddy, or happy. Another theory, according to Kara, states that the word also originally meant bent, twisted thing, curved. In the end, it's always meant not straight. Kara continues in their article to describe the other historical contexts and the increased frequency of the word in other negative connotations. In the early 1900s, it became more common both within and outside the community to use the word queer when referring to said groups, and was used in a more derogatory tone in the 1950s onwards. This is why it became a trauma for some currently middle-aged and elder folks bullied in their childhood and in school. It was used to describe drag queens, art students, painters, girls in male clothing, and the word in papers were often used in scare quotes. It got so bad that gays and lesbians interviewed received it negatively in the same vein as other slurs. In the 1980s, a movement began to reclaim the word in order to disempower the oppressors. Some took the term back because while the movement was started by trans women of color at the Stonewall riots by throwing a brick at the police, the LGBT community that we know today was very white and trans-exclusive. I've even spoken to my dad about his experience in the earlier days assisting in getting Pride started in my community, pushing for things like marriage equality, and hearing about women's groups excluding trans women because they are not deemed real women. Even now, the word is being erased in images today. It really helped to see this post recently spread around on Tumblr. It starts with an image posted by Tumblr user A Day in the Lesbian Life, with the caption, "The first Pride was a riot. Wall sticker in Marlborough Lesbian Pub, Brighton." Then it's reblogged by Bifox Styles, with a response that sparks a conversation. I'm actually realizing this now, but the original poster said queer power, and someone erased that and replaced it with gay power. Real classy. Barbie Dream Dumpster then replies with a completely unedited image with the words queer power, compared to the former image of gay power, as found posted on a poll. And Tumblr user WhatWearProblem comments with the following, hashtag is this real? Well, I'm not exactly an expert at image analysis, but the bottom text in the first one looks much cleaner than the top text, while the second one matches better. Also, the creases in the second one on the Q and U seem like the sort of detail that wouldn't be faked. Finally, this actually matches up significantly better to queer politics than gay politics. It was always queers who advocated and took the front lines in direct action. Tumblr user Burgess then points out, if you put the image in an editor or just view the full size of the first image, it becomes very obvious that the text on the bottom was added later. All of the vertical lines in every letter are pixel-perfect straight lines. That is basically impossible with a photo of a poster that is both visibly at an angle and has paper weathering and other distortion. Look at the verticals of the white text to compare. The only distortion of the text is the JPEG artifacts we would expect in the level of contrast. There is no lighting on the pink text either, another highly suspicious trait. Additionally, if you crop out the pink text in OP, original poster, and run an image search, you get the second photo, as well as four or five other photos of the poster, all reading queer power. With the pink text left in, however, the only version of the poster is this exact image, sourcing to the original poster. WhatWearProblem returns with newfound justified anger. I want every single person who ever argued with me on that queer post to take a long, hard look at this. I have been told at least dozens of times that, quote, nobody is saying you can't identify as queer, end quote, that I am, quote, ignoring history, end quote, that they're not trying to shift back to gay, etc. Now here's this post in which queer people are having their art defaced in order to rewrite their identity, where they're being forcibly rewritten as gay, where history is being literally goddamn erased. It's got three times the notes of that queer post, and as far as I can tell, Bifox Styles is the first one to challenge this narrative. And I'm not gonna hold my breath on y'all to call out OP. They're literally stealing our history, rewriting it into a new version that excludes more than half of the community. And nobody's challenging this. You're too busy trying to shut down inclusive, egalitarian language. Shame on every last one of you. Tumblr user VastSpider comments with equal shock. That's like a really famous poster, at least if you're over a certain age. I recognize it immediately. Yeah, it never said gay power originally, it said queer power. What the actual fuck? The final comment that came up on my dashboard really nailed it for me though, especially as a person of color who already has their history erased and appropriated on the daily. Etc. posts, ironically, just before this crossed my dash, Oxford University Press shared a link to a new archive of queer oral history. If not for Tumblr's recent push to wipe queer from our collective memory, I wouldn't have thought twice about OUP using the term. After all, it was chanted in pride and defiance when over a million of us participated in the 1993 March on Washington to demand an end to discrimination. Etc. attaches an image of the Washington Monument and a link posted to the video made on that day with a quote from the video. We've come to Washington to show everyone that we're here, we're queer, and we're not going anywhere. Etc. continues, queer theory, queer studies, new queer cinema, queer liberation. It was and remains the umbrella term in academia, since gay leaves out the bulk of people discriminated against for their gender and/or sexuality. In the past year, I've seen some Tumblr members trying to suppress the word queer, just as people back then tried to suppress us. The excuse is that it's sometimes used as a slur, but so is gay. In my 45 years, I have heard seen gay used as a slur far more often. At first, I tried to respect the fact that queer bothered some Tumblr users, even though it was painful for me to see queer positive posts tagged Q slur. But the more I thought about it, the more I realized that caving in to those asking us to drop the term queer would permit homophobic and or transphobic sensibilities to define our identities. Do we have to drop gay now as well, or tag a G slur? Since when did we stop reclaiming these words as a matter of pride? Isn't this just the latest ploy of internalized homophobia, transphobia sneaking up on us? Unfortunately, erasing queer from our vocabulary has hurtful real-world consequences. Silencing queer silences many of those who fought, marched, rioted, and died for your rights. It erases those who are queer but not gay, trans, intersex, non-binary, lesbian, bisexual, aromantic, asexual people, and more. See why the term is so unnecessary? Erasure, minimization of queer people is how we end up with disrespectful historical revisionism, like that Stonewall movie, or the Photoshop poster above, rewriting our history with a lie. And that's the real kicker. Erase queer from our vocabulary, and we erase future generations' ability to learn about their past. How will they be able to find LGBTA+ history if you teach them not to use one of the main key words they need to search for to find it? How much of our past and present community will be rendered invisible and their needs ignored? This article is really, really worth a read. If those now lobbying against the term queer are successful. Decades ago, when being out was taking a huge risk, we chanted, "We're here, we're queer, get used to it." It would be a bitter irony, even as mainstream society becomes, quote, used to it, as demonstrated by the Supreme Court to the bridge of the USS Enterprise, our own community becomes less used to it. Think about the forces of prejudice who were trying to silence us when that queer power sign was made. Please don't let them win. Now I detracted a little bit, but let's go back to Kara, who made a second article a month later titled More Than Words, Queer, Part 2, Growing Pains. In this second part, Kara talks about the shift between queer as a slur and its transformation into a reclaimed identity and disarming our oppressors. So mid-1980s, AIDS crisis is going on. Kara mentions ACT UP and gay men's health crisis and other LGBT groups that are focused in AIDS-related activism and programs. Time passes and four gay men from ACT UP decide to splinter off to call itself Queer Nation. The importance of this to me is how they are described and how I want to be described for years to come, along with other nice things people could say about me. Yeah, I'm kind, I'm thoughtful, honest, gentle, etc. But I also want to be known for what these folks were known for, and I quote from this article. By this time, thanks to the efforts of previous generations, the word queer was taboo in polite society, so it would have been surprising when the splinter group chose to call itself Queer Nation. Except the fact that they so clearly didn't want to be polite. They were angry. They called themselves militants, outraged, full of ragged laughs that sound more demonic than joyous. They needed a name to match their nature, and what better way to shock people than to pepper all your flyers and chants with the most popular vernacular term of abuse, generally used against you. Second, by co-opting the word, the group hoped to take out of the hands of homophobes and bashers, linguistically disarming the enemy while constantly reminding themselves of what they were up against. Queer can be a rough word, an early manifesto put it, but it is also a sly and ironic weapon. Third, the word queer was meant to challenge and swamp out the terms lesbian and gay, which to some seemed exclusionary, with their restrictive limits of gender and sexuality. An assimilationist, associated with the desire for approval from straight society and unquestioning acceptance of the status quo. Queer, instead, welcomed a multiplicity of sexualities and genders and suggested a radical confrontational challenge to normalcy, rather than a drive toward it. As the manifesto says, being queer means leading a different sort of life. One where your very existence is rebellious, your every action is politically charged, and every time we win. End quote. That's what I'm all about. I may be demi, but I agree with the general idea that my very existence is charged. Don't confuse it that my humanity is worth arguing over, like, whether or not I deserve rights, but I just am. I've had people actually duck their heads when they see me now because I'm not afraid of being myself. If I even remember who rung me on the street, I'll now comment on who they are and what they did. Or I won't have to say anything, but they're running. I live to be respected, and if you're not gonna do that, I would rather you run. You get it. They did so much work to show that we're here, we're queer, and get used to it. I like that. Get used to me. I'm not going anywhere until it's my time. So after this organization successfully got queer into a lot of mainstream culture, it died out internally, but it also sprouted new things. Queer theory and other queer studies in academia, the Lesbian Avengers. They sound very cool and I have yet to check them out, but that'll be for another time. I also like this quote that Kara pulls from David M. Halperin, in what I agree is poetic. Queer is an identity without essence. It describes a horizon of possibility whose precise extent cannot, in principle, be delineated in advance. And Kara says, basically, queer is what you want it to be, as long as it's pushing against something. Totally about that. I am totally about that. I like being different. Yeah, we're all humans, but I also like having that variation in humanity, as long as we're free to express it in a non-harmful way. And finally, there's this post one of my family members shared that I will also share with you, and I wholeheartedly agree with, of What Queerness Means to Me by Jesse Carr. Queerness to me means something deeper than who I sleep with or what kind of sex I have. It means swimming against the current, questioning arbitrary norms, creating family and kinship beyond blood, rejecting respectability politics, forging new ideals as to what constitutes humanity and morality. Queerness means opposition to war and rejection of gender norms that privilege violence over other forms of resolving conflict. Queerness means opposition to whiteness, understanding that homophobia is inextricable from racism. Indeed, that the invention of homosexuality was part of a eugenicist effort to define ideal types of bodies and promote sexual reproduction of these ideal types. Queerness means opposition to imperialism, a project that has always relied on the imposition of colonial gender and sexual norms as a means of destroying indigenous cultures and lifeways. Queerness means opposition to capitalism, because capitalism promotes the commodification and objectification of bodies and sex, resulting in particular forms of exploitation that are incompatible with freedom and liberation. Queer pride means taking pleasure in the disruption of norms that serve only to divide, isolate, and oppress. Queer pride means reclaiming the shame and stigma that gets attached to non-normative bodies and redirecting this shame and stigma back onto the norms that serve only to divide, isolate, and oppress. Queer pride means redefining healthy and normal and asserting that the only thing truly pathological are the norms that serve to divide, isolate, and oppress. Queer pride means radical love that extends to all people and beings. And that's queer. So, hopefully you all enjoyed that video. It took a lot of time and effort to make it, and I still got so much more information to show you, and I have to do it quick. So, that's what queer means to me, means to others who use it, but it's also why I fight for my right to use it for me and others that want to use it. If this doesn't drive the point home, the push against using the word is actually pretty recent. And the only reason I really dig really hard into my use of the word is because of TERFs, TWERFs, and SWERFs, which are a whole another can of worms. And if you don't know what that is, I'm going to get into it. I highly recommend that you check out theterfs.com for all things to know about TERFs, to understand what their logic is, what their angle, how to combat it, or overall, how to see through the BS. So TERFs stands for Trans Exclusionary Radical Feminists, and SWERFs are sex worker exclusionary radical feminists, and TWERFs are trans women exclusionary radical feminists. Make sense? Okay. All right. So, check that out when you have a chance. These terms are used to differentiate from truly radical feminists that are trans, inclusive, anti-racist, and supportive of women's choices to control what they do with their bodies and gender expression, reproduction, and sex. I would prefer to replace the word radical with reactionary, if only because they react to trans inclusive positivity. For some reason, TERFs are claiming that TERF is a slur, but it's a bunch of white noise to me, as much as people complain. I call them privileged or acting white. They don't have to be white, but they're acting like it. I occasionally act white, and sometimes I need a good call out to check my light skin privilege. TERFs go off the idea that trans women are predatory to women and are still men that retain their privilege because they chose to be a woman and have never lived to be a woman before that, and therefore do not know what women's pain is. So you're not really a woman. You can't sleep in the same spaces or enter the same bathrooms. Sound familiar? Well, the above ideology feeds into transphobia and current campaigns to let trans folks use the bathroom consistent with their identities, feeding into older propaganda that LGBT folk are predatory to women and children. But they never talk about young trans folk. We're not talking about actual men who are pedophiles or the men actually rape outside of the bathrooms or within homes all the time and their abused victims. But you don't see them helping us either to get us gender-neutral bathrooms either. They just don't want us in public spaces. How dare you be proud of being yourself, huh? So, queer people use inclusive language like LGBTQIAP+, or quote bag. It just doesn't cut it. I know some people that don't like labels because it puts them in a permanent box, but queer isn't so much a box as it is an ocean of freedom to change as needed. In other discussion posts on Tumblr, I can see posts made of why queer is a fine word to reclaim, empower, and radically include those who are otherwise abandoned by the system. Queer is a word that works for all time for words we have yet to invent, feelings we have yet to name, because sometimes certain words are close, but but queer works at all times. So, here we go. Tumblr user Lame Williams puts down in words very well. When it comes to words for not straight, there are hardly any choices. There are hardly any choices that didn't originate as ways to stigmatize or pathologize us. We are all using reclaimed slurs to describe ourselves. Also, queer is reclaimed in a particularly empowering way. It doesn't just mean same-sex attraction, but encompasses a whole spectrum of attractions and gender orientations. It's a word that says asexuals, pansexuals, bisexuals, trans folks, gender fluid and genderqueer, and genderless folks, and people who are still figuring themselves out, hey, you've got a home here. We don't need to categorize you to love you. And, here we go. Catch up with me. This is important because there are a lot of divisions within the LGBTQ+ world, and in particular, cis gay men and cis lesbians often overlook or exclude trans, bi, and asexual people. Queer is the only word that not only demands equal acceptance for everyone, but leaves the door open for words and descriptors that haven't been invented yet. And somebody else pointed out earlier to me, and of course I've lost the post, but it's really suspicious that all of the reclaimed slurs, the ones that get the most pushback, is the one that is most radically accepting of all identities. And you know what? That means a lot to me, okay? That means a lot. Like, hey, you've got a home here. We don't need to categorize you to love you. And on top of that, I won't be overlooked. And people like me are often overlooked. I'm going to go into article of TERFs, and again, I'm going to tell you to check out theTERFs.com for resources on TERF ideology. That is literally theTERFs.com, not TERFs.com, theTERFs.com. So if you might be one, you might want to check that out so you know how to avoid it, how to identify it, and why it's bad. So now I'm going to go into this article that I picked up from The New Yorker, written by Michelle Goldberg, What is a Woman? The Dispute Between Radical Feminism and Transgenderism, published August 4th, 2014. where Goldberg lays out the differences. I will also juxtapose the article with a Tumblr discussion later on, after I go into an example of a TERF that has been in the news recently, by the Dead Flag, and how to be trans-inclusive feminist, which really helps lay out the fallacies in TERF arguments. So, Goldberg illustrates a scene for the reader of a conference that took place on May 24th for the event called Rad Femmes Respond. At this conference, these so-called Rad Femmes, wanted to defend their banning on prostitution and referring to transgender folks by their assigned genders at birth and who should be allowed in, quote, women's spaces, whether it's restrooms or events exclusively for women. Stuff like this is from second wave feminism, okay? Right now, we are currently experiencing third wave and probably even further because we are trying to include race into the conversation. Because otherwise, feminism hasn't ever included race for the longest time. Probably still isn't, actually. So, and I'd like to work on, like, wave 10 or something, okay? If you ever see me or anything not on third wave or beyond, let me know. Sometimes I worry that I'm a little bit lukewarm in my message, or I'm not thinking enough into the decolonization praxis hard enough. But then someone will message me online and say, hey, I think you're being divisive because of your white people jokes, your cishet jokes, your neurotypical jokes. Then I give myself a pat on the back, because if I know there's people having a problem with that, that I use jokes to cope with my trauma and my daily oppression, then I know I'm well ahead and I'm maintaining my hard work as I've always meant to be, working twice as hard than any of the people I was around, working at mediocre levels and being rewarded for it. So, back to this article. Goldberg then quotes the keynote speaker of the event, Robin Morgan, making a bigoted statement that occurred at the meeting when a folk singer, Beth Elliott, was scheduled. The quote is as follows, content warning for transphobia, as given. I will not call a male she. Their 32 years of suffering in this androcentric society and of surviving have earned me the title of woman. One walk down the street by a male transvestite, 5 minutes of his being hassled, which he may enjoy. And then he dares to think he understands our pain? No, in our mother's names and in our own, we must not call him sister. So, that's the end of that quote. That was back then. Now, a lot fewer feminists are like that. But, like racists, tactics are hardly changed and outdated views are harder to eradicate. But if it takes racism this long, 500 plus years, to be seen as absolutely unacceptable... Wait, sorry. We still accept that. We've got Donald Trump. Damn it. I expect the same of sexism as well as other forms of oppression that we have yet to confront or haven't even acknowledged yet. So, the issue outlined between trans folks and these second-wave TERFs is that the trans people feel like the gender they identify as, and trapped in a body that doesn't fit, and that TERFs reject this idea of women brain, etc. That if women act a certain way, it means they're being forced to by society, and this means, like, being generally non-confrontational, despite your personality being naturally that way, or choosing to express yourself in a feminine way, that isn't challenging society in some way. Like if you genuinely enjoy wearing a dress or skirts or caring and nurturing. Goldberg examines this mindset to show that gender then becomes less of an identity and more of a position in a caste system. So if you're born male, you retain that privilege no matter what. And if we're to follow this logic, in my case, I chose to become a man because I was born a woman, and I'm somehow self-mutilating, self-hating because I'm trying to raise myself in this caste system. Because I didn't know how to love myself as a woman and be proud. And in the case of trans women, even though this is the weirdest logic to follow, the reason they bring themselves down is because of sexual fetishism. I'm not even gonna go into this. It is ridiculous. Also, I hate this. Appropriative of actual racial caste systems to explain gender and sex. Including the word appropriation to explain trans folks and their transition as if we were appropriating the male-female body for ourselves or just our bodies. It's our bodies, nobody else's. Trans folks have been altering our bodies with medicines to change them and fit ourselves since forever. Look it up. Now, since I was in college in 2011, 2016, I got to see the beginning of the shift here in Minnesota of people asking our pronouns, and I came out perhaps sometime after my first or second year of college as a man, and trying to navigate my newfound identity in a healthy way that doesn't adhere to toxic, more common expressions of masculinity. Looking at my ancestors' way of expressing the male identity, taking bits and pieces from that, and then what I like about myself now. Me with my shaped sides, my long mohawk hairstyle is how I express my manliness. And when it was time to replace my glasses prescription, I actually changed my glasses from a thin wire to these square blocky ones and square out the features in my face, which helps a lot because I am a very, very soft man. Very soft. And it gives me a bit of a middle ground without trying to go hardcore into masculinity and be like, ugh, macho and shiz, you know? And it's okay, you know? One day I will fund myself to physically transition so that I can have the body that works out for me. And if someone doesn't respect who I put myself out as socially, then I don't associate them, and that's that. I got to see the concerns of men's health be addressed in terms of reproduction, not limited to just women, as in cis women, and not just for cis men, but trans men who also get pregnant. And it's nice to see because I don't know where I'll be in my future, but I do know that I want to try and have kids on my own terms or whatever works for me at the time. I also got to see the increased use of the word cisgendered or cis, and it's nice to have a word for things. Language is an ever-evolving thing. The whole idea of supremacy was to other themselves from human beings. Did you know that? So, like, when the Europeans arrived to this continent, my people and many other indigenous folks spoke to them, and the Europeans asked, "Who are you?" And my ancestors answered, "Nikantlaka." For other people, it was other things to describe themselves as. We are humans. We're people. We live here, you know? And then the Europeans introduced themselves, "We are white." Okay? People keep complaining that I and my mom lump up all these white people together or that we don't know if they're white. But if you didn't act so white, we wouldn't call you such. You set yourself up. You also get to be cisgendered, heterosexual, able-bodied, neurotypicals, or otherwise privileged butt faces. Then I'll call them exactly what I want, okay? I'm queer, and they've been calling me queer for years. Yes, I'm accepting it, but I'm taking it for myself. Thank you very much. I'm what I say, whatever I am, okay? Are you queer? You are? I sure am! Yeah, I just had to put in that joke. I really like that meme. It's my favorite. But you get to decide what you want to be. Show it. Act like it. I call myself whatever I want, and those in my community as they are. And I'll call you out for what you are, as I see it, or you can correct me with your actions. Just don't act so privileged. Ain't that hard. Back to the article. So, generally, I hate stuff like Burning Man and music festivals, and I'm gonna also tell you that I strongly dislike stuff like these women camps. And let me clarify what I mean is that women with a why, like, why you gotta be like the cis ladies, why? Okay? If you don't know what these women camps are, generally they're a cis women-only space where it's supposed to be a matriarchal space, where cis women can hang out for a period of time, drop off their kids at a daycare spot if they have them, disabled cis women can go. And now you're probably saying, Nemo, what gives you the Burning Man vibe? It's the walking around naked part. Yes, you can walk around naked. Now, generally, I don't mind people walking around naked in your own home or whatever, or what you do behind closed doors, etc. But it just gives me this white effery vibe, okay? Along with that, the camp that Goldberg writes about is a women-born women camp only. This only bothers me because it's the same vibe that reminds me of straight folks hanging out with lesbian or gay folks in the locker room, which is what Goldberg mentions. However, why do cis people have to control where we're seen or where we're going and how? The article concludes with the final point that cis people can avoid us, but it shouldn't be expected that we're the ones walking on eggshells. Your trauma with cis men does not trump our rights to exist in our identities, and don't invade our spaces. That's on you. Now, I'm going to get to the part that I needed to talk about, and I actually had to bring this in last minute. We're going to go over the article that I put my thumb on and move on to the recent Rose McGowan fiasco. We got 20 minutes left, so I have to hurry. I grabbed some tweets from Kaylin Conrad. no pronouns, so I'm just going to refer to them as Conrad. And here we go. So, Rose McGowan on trans women. Now, there's a video at the end of this, but I'm not going to play it because of the swears, and this way you can just read the censored tweets. It's just the F word a lot, because I guess this person doesn't know how to express themselves when they're having a tantrum. Rose McGowan on trans women. They assume because they felt like a woman on the inside, that's not developing as a woman, that's not growing as a woman, that's not living in this world as a woman, and a lot of stuff I hear the trans complaining about, yeah, welcome to the world. You'll never once ask me what it was like to grow up as a woman, what it's like to get a period, what it's like when you grow breasts since people are suddenly screaming at you on the street. And people are screaming, because they assume, because they felt like a woman on the inside, that's not developing as a woman, that's not growing as a woman, that's not living in the world as a woman, and a lot of stuff I hear trans complaining about, yeah, welcome to the world, it's our world. Oh yeah, really? This is how you're being treated? Yeah, me too. And they're treated that way, but so are we. No, Rose, uh-uh. You don't get to say that shiz, okay? So Conrad continues tweeting in this thread. Rose McGowan on violence towards gay men and other marginalized groups. So this whole thread is just really documenting how gross this person is, okay? Just let that sink in. 60% of gun violence deaths in the U.S. are women. You telling me that if 60% of all gun violence deaths were gay, men, or any other marginalized group, we wouldn't have a serious effing problem here? This wouldn't be an epidemic and a crisis here, but it doesn't matter if it's just women? It's okay. Rose McGowan on trans people, again. I relate to trans people because I was an incorrect skin of life. Don't Rachel Dojal me, whatever her name is. You're not trans race either, okay? No. Rose McGowan on misgendering trans people. Kendall Jenner, do you know what? Hey, Kendall Jenner, do you know what happened today? White male pigs like your repup dad raped the USA. Rose McGowan on Victor Salva. Well, Salva is convicted and registered sex offender, which might account for some social awkwardness. Yeah, I still don't really understand the whole story or history there, and I'd rather not because it's not really my business. But he's an incredibly sweet and gentleman, lovely to his crew, and a very hard worker. Isn't that nice of you, Rose? Enabling these pedophiles. Rose McGowan on the N-word. This rich, famous Hollywood white male privilege in action. Replace the word women with the N-word. How's it feel? McGowan, what are you doing? Do you not realize that black women exists? It's still bad, no matter what. You're effing up. Rose McGowan on how molesting boys makes you gay. If Roy Moore had molested little boys, the far right would have kicked him out ASAP. But because it's just girls, they won't believe. More of a problem with gay predator than a straight predator. Don't throw us under the bus. Gross. And then, Conrad gives us a reminder. Things that are not effing cool, TERFs, tweeting at anyone using misogynistic slurs, denying or invalidating anyone's experience as a woman or survivor, TERFs, calling her a C-word. Seriously, WTF, people. And it's true, because you're not going to, like, get through to her, okay? Rose McGowan on the queer rights movement. I see how basically people who's fought for the right to stand up on top of the float wearing an orange Speedo and take Molly, MDMA. She kind of apologized-ish for this, which sounds to me like she really didn't. Conrad continues, okay, get ready for a whole new... A lot more transphobia from Rose McGowan, so consider this a content warning. And she gets worse. So this is based off of the whole recent book tour thing. Wednesday evening on the fourth floor of the Union Square, Barnes & Noble in Manhattan, Rose McGowan had a book signing. A woman asked Rose about transphobic comments made on RuPaul's podcast that she saw me tweet about in this thread. This woman began to confront Rose on her transphobia, but was cut off by Rose, who said, hold on, so am I. We are the same. My point was, we are the same. There's an entire show called ID Channel, a network dedicated to women getting abused, murdered, sexualized, violated, and you're part of that too, sister. It's the same, McGowan retorted. When asked by the trans woman what Rose has done for trans people, you do nothing for them. Trans women are in men's prisons. What have you done for them? She asked. What have you done for women? McGowan asked. Ugh, the gall. Rose demanded the trans woman sit down. A shouting match occurred, and the trans woman was dragged out and yelled, white cis feminism! White cis feminism! Rose then shouted this at the trans woman, Don't label me, sister. Don't put your labels on me. Don't you effing do that. Do not put your labels on me. I don't come from your planet. Leave me alone. I do not subscribe to your rules. I do not subscribe to your language. You will not put labels on me or anybody. Step the F back. What do I do for the effing world? And you should be effing grateful. Shut the F up. Get off my back. What have you done? I know what I've done. God damn it. So she has like this really like white feminist tantrum, and it's is ugly. It's ugly. So ugly. Ah, terrible. And so Conrad goes on. Then the classic rage of cis white woman called out on her privilege. I'm mad that you put S on me because I have a effing vagina and I'm white or I'm black or I'm yellow or I'm purple. Ugh. F off. All of us want to say it. Rose then said, I don't agree to your cis effing word. And then she said this. She said, let's see, it's a little bit cut off from another quote I see. And then she said this. When you break it down, it is much smaller population. There's not a network here devoted to your effing death. There's not advertisers advertising tampons with a camera lovingly going up a girl's body as she's being lovingly raped and strangled. Pee off. And until you collect that effing check, back up. My name is Rose McGowan, and I am obviously effing brave. Conrad that tweets with a video attachment, and you can see the thread during and at the end of my show. I didn't want to play the video if only because of the amount of F-words that she has, because most of it was actually transcribed in all these tweets. And also, all the videos that you're going to find are going to describe the trans woman as a heckler and harasser and a lot of other transphobic issues. So I decided to skip it, and it's awful. So I'm just going to skip over that. Let's see. Yeah, it was terrible. So this is a video, Rose McGowan using her privilege. You can look at it right there. And then on The Daily Show, the next day, Rose McGowan accused a trans woman of being a spy hired to harass her. I was also seeing articles accusing her that she was also sexually harassing people. And I was disgusted. Disgusted. So watch out for white supremacist cisgendered TERFs like McGowan or Chelsea Manning, who was apparently recently hanging out with white supremacists, I guess. So I'll have to get into that later on my next program, because actually I have literally maybe 5 minutes left on this program. But I'm glad it's been fun so far. I wanted to make sure I got on this information. Go ahead. I'm like rushing. Maybe if you need to walk around, pause this video, whatever, come back to it, walk off your frustration, because that's what I do. I have all this information. Keep this in mind when recognizing skinhead feminists, okay? McGowan might as well be a skinhead now, because this woman had her running away with that hair was left on fire, because she ain't touring anymore now. I gotta move on to this Tumblr thread by the Dead Flag that I mentioned earlier about how controlled trans folks are and having to overperform our gender identity to placate cisgendered folks to believe we are who we are. And I'm running short on time. So the Dead Flag received a question in their inbox from an anonymous person asking the following. I'm a feminist and I'd like to be a good trans ally. Why are there so many trans people who characterize playing with dolls, wearing dresses, liking pink as a sign they were a girl? And why do some say that their interest in sports was a sign they were a boy? It may not be a community-wide issue, so forgive me that. It strikes me as essentialist and somehow tactless. Somewhat tactless. Is it okay for me to question people who say things like that? Thank you for your insight. And so the Dead Flag answered with this. This is actually a form of institutional violence that trans people, largely trans women, face. So to copy-paste from a previous post I made on this matter, growing up, I had a few trans lady friends who were hyped about being openly, visibly butch and or GNC trans women when they began transitioning. Three of the bunch committed suicide after basically being blacklisted out of access to medical transition. Others were wealthy enough to be able to move to where they could have a second or third shot. A femme trans lady friend forgot to apply nail polish and makeup to one of her sessions with her doctor, and that led to him keeping her from medical resources for the next 2 years of care, and she as well as ended up killing herself. I could keep listing story after story with similar narratives and endings, and it's pretty common. gatekeeping, whether it's within medical context or a social one, relies on heavily policing trans women to prescribe the normative gender expression dialed up to 11. We don't, and we tend to suffer. And I don't think it's all at all fair to cast blame on trans women who follow those norms, not when our survival is paramount and we're coerced into these conditions via potentially fatal consequences. Like, I'm sloppy, lazy femme in terms of my expression, often shifting towards the hoodie and jeans aesthetic because it's just comfy. But every doctor appointment, every tribunal over my transition, best believe I was probably among the most stereotypically feminine presenting ladies those docs saw that day. Not a chance I'd risk it. Every job interview, every meeting when I was looking for housing, same deal. Survival wins over the microscopic impact I might have on the reproduction of gender norms in those instances. Especially when my continued survival means I can live to fight those and other battles in other ways less tied to my survival. So to be blunt and concise, it's not trans folks upholding harmful notions of gender, it's cis folks. Cis men and cis women weaponizing society against us to uphold gender norms, through us, because we're deemed as threats and as less legitimate. So our standards are often exponentially higher than our cis counterparts. Like, I live in literal Canada, and this gatekeeping shiz happens all the time. It still happens. I have sat down and taught so many trans people how to strategize which language to use, what narratives will provide the path of least resistance so that we can get what we need in the aggressively oppressive system we live in. Like, as a young child, I played hockey. I liked micro machines. I liked video games. I liked climbing trees, riding bikes, building forts, track and field. I told my therapist that in my third session that when she asked about my childhood, just minutes after telling me she felt I was ready for hormones, I had to endure 23 more sessions with her, spread across a year and a half, to get back to where I was midway through that third session, a long enough time for her to forget enough about those remarks on my childhood before I could get those hormones. When she asked about my childhood again in the 22nd or 23rd session, I told her I played with dolls and that secretly my favorite color was pink. As a child, and that I yearned to play house but no one played with me, that I'd try on my mom's shoes and some of her clothes, etc., etc. And after I tossed out enough cliche elements of the standard narrative, basically painting myself as a very heterosexual, hyperfeminine 50s housewife, I got access. I can't say that if I ever interviewed on public media that I'd stray from that safe narrative, because chances are my doctors could see, and I could lose access to healthcare, employment, housing, etc. Like I said, I've had friends who forgot to wear nail polish and were punished for it. I had a friend, in the dead of winter, who wore pants to an appointment and was suddenly told by the doctor that he had no confidence that she was a real trans woman. A trans dude friend of mine got in a car wreck and got busted up ribs and couldn't wear his binder comfortably for a while, and his doctor refused to renew his prescription to T. He eventually had to find a new doctor, endure the waiting list, and get back on, which took like 9 months. So, if we're going to say things like that, it's almost always a self-defense mechanism. It's very hard to tell who we can trust, who has the power to derail our transitions, or kill our support networks, etc. And while I'm sure if all trans people revolted and told the truth, it might help disrupt the system of norms and standards of gatekeeping, but I could never ask others like me to stand on principle that would likely kill a great many of them. I know that without HRT, I wouldn't survive more than maybe 3 months. It's really that simple, and I know so many others in the same boat. It'd be like walking into a building burning from a 3-alarm fire to try and activate the inactive sprinkler system instead of calling the fire department to pull it out. This isn't our responsibility. I think it's important to remember that trans people who are coerced into expressing these narratives are a tiny demographic, so our ability to significantly reproduce or essentialize any gender norms is negligible at best, and that in the overwhelming majority of the world, trans folks have to comply with exaggerated gender norms for our gender simply for survival. And that survival must take precedence over worries of our reproducing harm, that we'd only be reproducing because cis people can't get their heads out of their but over their need to police everything about our bodies and our lives. Like, in case you are not aware, the born in the wrong body language stemmed from trans patients decades and decades ago who were being experimented on, sterilized, mutilated, and tortured. Eventually, doctors listened to us and our pleas to just treat our dysphoria, but our language didn't fit necessarily with their worldview. They couldn't accept that pre-transition trans men and trans women were actually men and women. that we had men's, women's bodies, that we were male, female. So we were coerced into using their language for us in order to get the treatment we needed, to get any shred of support we could get. The cis-dominated structures of science and medicine are to blame for that sexism, successism, essentialism, etc. as well. We're just trying to get the help we need in a world that does not want us to get that help, and will generally only provide if we tell them everything they want to hear. Some of the greener, fresh-out-of-the-closet trans folks push that sort of language narrative hard because it's what they're exposed to. It's what they've been taught to keep them safe, and it's pretty wrong to be critical of someone for surviving and actively reducing harm against themselves for society at large. So if you get the urge to criticize a trans person for bringing that sort of thing up, maybe instead criticize the structures that prevent us from saying anything else. Let that sink in for a bit. Soak it all in. Because this Tumblr thread is just really insightful for both trans people trying to understand what they're going through, as well as what they can do to gain access in a transphobic system that seeks to control us. This Tumblr user, Jennifer Povey, contributes some thoughts of their own. Trans men and women are pressured into performing masculinity or femininity more than cis men and women. I used to think that trans people tend to be that way, then I realized society pressures them into it. Whilst I, a cis woman, can get away with speaking in public in jeans and a button-down shirt, I do like to femme out when I feel like it, mind, a trans woman has to wear a dress and heels. I, as a cis woman, can follow motorsports and like Top Gear. A trans woman who likes those things has to hide them. And not only is this oppressive, but the pushing of trans women into stereotypically feminine roles can deny society that talents... The talents they may possess in traditionally masculine areas, the expectation to perform extreme femininity is likely to push trans women out of STEM, for example. Trans men, on the other hand, are pushed even more into toxic masculinity and macho values than cis men. I don't think it's as much of a gap between the extreme forcing of gender roles is actually worse for men than it is for women. I can wear a pantsuit. If my husband were to wear a skirt, he wouldn't. He's not the type. But, you know. Tumblr user Hopology adds, "The moment I announced my transition to the public, someone I worked with on a professional level asked, incredulously, when I was going to start dressing like a woman. I was wearing trip pants, a tank top with a bra, sneakers, and I asked him what a woman dresses like. His answer, well, that opens a whole can of worms. Yeah, you see what happened right there? Women are not expected to dress a certain way. But if I want to be seen as a woman, I have to dress drastically different from what I did before. I have to show I want it. On top of that, if I hadn't told my psychologist about how when I was a child, I didn't feel comfortable playing with boys or sports, she wouldn't have approved me for estrogen. She told me that because I didn't wear makeup and lipstick, it was hard to justify transitioning. We don't do this to force women into feminine roles, but we are punished, neglected, and killed if we don't match up with feminine or masculine based on what other people expect. It's terrifying." Jennifer Povey comes back with, "I think cis women are pushed into feminine roles. I have failed to get jobs because I insisted on wearing flats or did not wear makeup. But trans women get it worse, because they are constantly having to prove that they're women. And ironically, some of the people who harass trans women the most are the same people who tell cis women they're supporting patriarchy if they wear makeup. I only wear makeup when I have an actual reason to, because dang it, that stuff is expensive and annoying." Tumblr user Hobbits are... Bass then inputs a professional perspective. "I'm a trans therapist, and I advise my clients to straight up lie to their doctors and other psychologists, psychiatrists if it gets them hormones. I tell them to make up whatever stereotyped, unrealistic trans narratives they need if it will get them access to hormones and surgeries they need. The medical system is not set up to protect or help us. It's set up to safeguard cis people from being like us. This is why the entire idea of gatekeeping and everything relating to it needs to be burned to the ground. If anyone tells you gatekeeping is a good idea, no matter whether they are cis or trans, they are wrong and they are condemning trans people to death." So essentially, this discussion, all these points destroy the TERF narrative about how trans people are reproducing essentialist gender roles and stereotypes. The original person, the dead flag, who answered the question earlier, later says, "TERFs have heard the same stuff that in threat repeatedly over and over. They don't care, because they're not actually interested in ending misogyny. They're interested in upholding the structures that provide them a sense of power and innate superiority. Supremacy. I had a lot of radical feminist friends and mentors growing up, and they were trans-inclusive because they knew the above was true, and that successism as a system of power that works to marginalize trans and non-binary and non-cis folks, on top of reproducing and upholding misogyny as well, was a clearly visible and real system of oppression once you actually cared to look. Like, this was before sexism even had a name. They saw it, recognized it, played a major part in the construction of misogyny, implemented it in their understanding of radical feminist theory and praxis, and they work with me and other trans folks in my province to country to try to make things better. TERFs, on the other hand, cannot accept it. They can't because it would undermine most, if not all, of their feminist beliefs foundation. So to protect their worldview, they react and lash out. The backlash effect. They literally cannot accept it without accepting that they've been worrying about much of their core beliefs and views. And their potential hypothetical human empathy towards trans people is infinitesimally smaller than that instinctive need to preserve themselves. It's why there's never any point in debating TERFs or engaging with them. I know, I spend close to a decade of my life trying. It's not worth it. Even if it's incredibly easy to prove their views on trans folks supposedly reproducing gender norms, they will never allow themselves to engage in evidence to the contrary. So, let's see. Yeah, you are now listening to Finding Me at KPPP-LP, Fargo-Moorhead, 88.1 FM. I went over my clock time, and I'm actually almost done, but wanted to fit that in. Holy crap. Think about that for a minute. I know I was talking really fast, but maybe it would help if you took a rewind. Back it up. I also dropped links. Look at them. Read them for yourselves. As survivors of genocide of our fellow queer folk through colonialism, willfully turning backs on us when we're sick, kicking us out of our homes, let me remind you, because I was picking up on the Bible every now and then. Quote, from verse 31 of Matthew, I think. When the Son of Man comes in his glory, and all the angels with him, he will sit on the glorious throne. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate the people from one another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He will put on the sheep on his right, and the goats on his left. Then the king will say to those on his right, Come, you who are blessed by my Father. Take your inheritance and the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me. Then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see you hungry, feed you, or thirsty, and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger, or invite you in, or needing clothes, and clothe you? When did we see you sick, or in prison, to visit you? The king will reply, Truly, I tell you, whatever you did for the one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me. Then he will say to those on the left, Depart from me, you who are cursed, into the eternal fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me nothing to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger, and you did not invite me in. I needed clothes, and you did not clothe me. I was sick and in prison, and you did not look after me. They will also answer, Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty, or a stranger, or needing clothes, or sick in prison, and did not help you? He will try, Truly I tell you, whatever you did not do for one of the least of these, you did not do for me. Then they will go away to eternal punishment, but the righteous to eternal life. Tell me, folks, who's hungry? Who's thirsty? Who's homeless and needs a place to stay? Give you a hint. That's your hint. Who's homeless and has clothes, no clothes, to survive the winters? Who's sick? Who's sitting on our prisons? You know who. People of color. Queer people. Or LGBT. Whatever you want to call yourselves. Especially youths. Disabled. Women. You know who. My fellow folks in the queer community, we have to survive to correct history from the lies and stories written by the murderers and accomplices. Queer is okay to use. Don't let TERFs into our communities. Don't let pedophiles in our communities. Don't let any of these efforts into our communities. We're here. We're queer. Get effing used to it. Did you find yourself while finding me? Feel free to send me a message. You can contact us at 701-566-0917. At Nemo Potatoes on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Check it out. Contact me through my contact at kppfm.com/find-me, and hit the contact tab or email me at nemo@kppfm.com. You can follow us on Facebook at 88.1 FM Fargo Moorhead, the People's Press Project, and Mixie-Can. Donations to Fargo Moorhead's newest low-power commercial-free radio station can be made at our website on kppfm.com/donate, and check out our underwriting opportunities at kppfm.com/underwriting-opportunities on how you can support the first queer radio program in the Red River Valley. Thank you for tuning in. See you next month, hopefully again on the first Wednesday on Finding Me.